we then ask for that little bit of, you know, that give and take, ask for it back and going, well, I'm going to put this out up. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to watch it. You don't have to engage with it at all. But a brand will pay me so that the rest of my content for you is always free and costs you nothing.
Hi, I'm Sarah Kearns and welcome to the podcast. This is a safe space to discuss the topics affecting everyday families. Let's take an inside look into our own realities and the realities of others. We'll learn together as knowledge creates empathy. Empathy shapes the way that we act, and those actions can change our family and those around us. This is the Conscious Project. You guys are always asking me what it's really like to be an influencer, a content creator, how I got into it, how others could get into it. I've been putting the conversation off because it's a little bit nerve-wracking, right? Like talking about what I make, paying taxes, and the old, what do you actually do? But I'm an open book, and I feel like the podcast is the perfect place for this kind of conversation. So I'm going to be brave and I'm going to share it all today. I pulled my bestie in because she sees what goes on behind the scenes as well as online. And we spoke so much, I had to split it into two parts. So here is part one, and I hope you enjoy.
Okay, this one is probably, I'm a little bit nervous about doing this one. We're reversing the roles a little bit, and I have my best friend on air with us. Hi, Gemma.
Hello.
Gemma is my friend, obviously. She's also my VA, so a virtual assistant. So basically, she's my right-hand man. She does all of the things. She also does all my graphic design. She does my website and emails, speaks with guests for the podcast. She does a lot of content creation for the podcast, Instagram, manages all of that for me. It's a bit of a random role, right? Like you kind of just jump in and help me.
Yes.
She also used to own a candle making business, which used influencers and was really prominent on social media. So she's sort of going to be really, really great to have on today, I thought, because she's got that both perspectives. Obviously, she's my friend and she sees what goes on behind the scenes. She sees what I produce online. And then she also knows what it's like being a brand, speaking with influencers and dealing with influencers. So we want to talk about content creator, blogger, influencer, whatever you want to use. I think we get a bit of a bad rap. A lot of misunderstanding about what we actually do and the benefits of brands using influencers. It really comes across online. I think sometimes it's like, oh, they just want free stuff all the time. And they don't understand why brands would even want to go near an influencer. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, what do you actually do? So we thought, let's just jump on. Let's have a chat about it. I'm obviously super honest and super open about what's going on. Here we are.
First things first. How did you start? How do you become an influencer, content creator, whichever title you like to use?
Yeah, that's like, it's something that I get flooded with all of the time, like every single day. Like, I want to do what you're doing. How do I do it? And I think it's probably really frustrating because most of us, like any of us you would ask, probably all just go, oh, I fell into it. Sorry. Like, I don't, there's not like this, there's not a way to sort of do it. So when I had Finn, who's my five-year-old, my liver failed when he was 6 weeks old. And Brad's always been a bit of a writer. He used to hack my Facebook page and when I would be sleeping after night shift or something and like do this big post about how incredible my husband is and rah, 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 and everyone, you know, would wake to a laugh. And he's always been a bit funny with words. So one day I got admitted to hospital. I literally get a phone call from my doctor with, so Finn was 6 weeks old, Knox was like 2.5 and totally nonverbal. So it was a really hard time. And I get a call from my doctor going, hi, your liver's failing. That's why you've been so sick for the last 6 weeks. You need to go to the hospital right now. And I'm like, I don't have time for that.
He's got time for that with two small children.
I have a 6 week old. breastfeeding and I have a 2-year-old. Like, I just, oh, I can go next week. Like, my husband's at work. He's like, no, no, your liver is failing. Like, you have to go right now. So I call Brad. I'm like, hey, babe, liver's failing. You're going to have to come home from work. And then I was admitted to hospital for a week. So we had to pull Finn off the boob onto a bottle. I needed surgery, heaps of meds, all that kind of stuff. So I'm laying in hospital just like beside myself without my newborn. You know, couldn't have him there because I couldn't breastfeed him because of the medication. They then wouldn't let me have him in hospital. So it was super awful. And Brad was like, had never had the kids by himself yet, right? Like, Finn was 6 weeks old. There was no reason ever yet that he would have him alone. I wasn't going anywhere without him. So he just got thrown into this role of being me and him at the same time without me, and just having to, you know, wean a baby onto a bottle and the whole works. And he put a post up one day on his personal Facebook. Just, I think it was a bit of a way for him just to like verbalize it all, and just to, I said to him, like, I want you to remember this time, because I, when life goes back to normal, I want you to remember how hard it is even just to pop to the grocery store and get milk. Like, you know, I want you to remember these little moments. And he put this post up and our friends were like, make this public so I can share it. And it was like, you know, today I had to be the mum. And I thought the dad and the mum were the same, but now I know what being mum, aka the full-time carer, actually involves, all the things I don't see because I'm at work. So he did, he made it public and it went mega viral.
Yeah, I remember sharing it. I actually saw it and shared
before
it.
Before we met,
yeah. I remember it clear as day, and I remember showing my partner and saying, see, this is tough.
I think that's literally why it went viral.
All the mums like, everywhere threw their hands up and said, amen.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. And it went crazy. Like, he had women sending him naked photos, and he was like, I am so busy. Like, we had newspapers contacting him, like everything. And he's like, I don't know if you read my post, but I'm like drowning. Like, I haven't got time to do all of this. Obviously still trying to get the kids in to see me, you know, when he could. And it was just a hectic time. And from there, he sort of created a public page. We directed everybody over there because when, like, it had like 70,000 likes on his post in a 24 hours. Like, it was just insane. So on Facebook, this is. So he directed it over there. And then we just began for years, like, what, probably 3 or 4 years. We just would chat about our lives and parenting, and people really resonated, and we started sort of sharing that we had lost Buddy, and obviously people resonated with that as well. So we I created my page because everyone was like, well, we want your wife's opinion, like, what does your wife think of all of this? You're saying your side, but because obviously we bicker a bit and we have our bit of our banter. So we had that going on Facebook for 3-4 years of building that community. And then I sort of went, oh, I'm going to go over to Instagram. They just released stories. It was super fun, and sort of went to people, okay, I'm on Instagram now, the people on Facebook. Overnight, I probably had like 8,000 followers came over out of the, I don't know, 80 or 90,000 on Facebook. And then from there, I've just built it. And I don't know why. I don't know why people follow me. And you know this more than anyone, because I say to you all the time, like, I have nothing to say of value. I don't know why. I don't know what people want to hear. I don't know what to write, because I don't know what people care about. I don't know why they're here.
Yeah, but we're always, it's hard to see that, because you just see yourself, and this goes for anybody in any role, really. You know, the imposter syndrome is strong in a lot of us, and we see ourselves as our day being not glamorous, or why would people want to watch this? Everybody else, you know, is doing the same thing as us, but that's what it is. That's the value in it. The value is that you're relatable, and that people do go, right, you know, it's not just me who feels this way. There's someone else here in the trenches. It's just that, you know, yeah, you're just relatable. And I think that's what it is. You keep it real. And that's why people tend to resonate. We tend to sort of, yeah, gravitate towards people that are like us or make us feel a little bit more normal. It's not that you feel like you need to add value to people's lives in some grand scheme. It's just quite simply the power of talking about your day and talking about yourself that, you know, that people, I think, are obviously tens of thousands of people are very much enjoying.
It's crazy. Yeah. So I started off with 8,000, which obviously came from Facebook, which so they were consuming the content on both platforms. So, and then just built it. And I think that when you write something that resonates with people, they share it. And that's the best way for you to be seen by new people who might read it and go, oh, I want to see what else she's got. They might flick through your page. And then you know what you do when you want to follow someone. You may have a little squeeze through and go, oh, are you for me or not? Or they'll hang around for a week and be like, nope, hate her.
You are not my people.
You are not my people. And that's totally fine. Like, there's been plenty of people that I've unfollowed because I'm like, you know what? I used to love it. I used to be here. Now it's not quite right for me, or it doesn't align anymore, yeah. or I'm out of that stage of my life or whatever. But I think, yeah, that you just have to be just you, because you can't, like, when we're showing off so much of our life, you can't put it on. You can't, you know, create it. Like, yes, you know, a lot of people have beautiful feeds. I'm not one of them, but a lot of people have beautiful feeds. But our stories in our lives, you can't, you know, curate to fit in someone's box. And I think you've just got to be yourself and write things that you're feeling, because like you said, chances are someone will feel the same. Yeah. And, you know, they're going to share it, and then eventually your platform will grow.
Yeah. There's someone on Instagram for everyone. There you go.
You got to find your people. Right?
Find your people. So you've done this, you've, you know, chipped away for years. You've got businesses approaching you, brands approaching you. This is clearly, we all know, for anyone who has followed you over the last 12 months, you've thrown in your full-time policing gig. And this is your full-time
gig.
Yeah,
I'm still working. Yeah. So at the time, like when all this was happening, I was still working full-time. So I went back to work full-time after Finn turned, well, about eight months. And at this stage, Brad was sort of like transitioning careers. So I was working full-time and he was sort of building himself back up. So my mom was a massive help. She had the kids a lot for us while we were just trying to, we were in that real building stage of our life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably where people really resonated, because they, you know, we were young and we had a lot of followers in the same age group as us, just like going, fuck, this is a lot. Like, yeah. I'm parenting and I'm working and I'm doing all of the things. Yeah. Yeah. Obviously policing's pretty hard on a family with shift work and babies that, you know, everyone knows my children's lack of sleep, love, and that they're all in our bed every night and everything. And so when you're going out for a night shift and leaving a two-year-old screaming his heart out for you, or being awake all night knowing that, you know, they're looking for you, it's pretty hard. It's
against every maternal instinct in your body, isn't it? But you're also fighting against what it is that you've got to do. You know, the survival. That's how
you're getting in the car, and Knox would just be standing at the window screaming.
Yeah,
that's like, oh, like it just so crap.
And they don't understand. Yeah. They don't understand that it's that leaving that, you know, that is putting the roof over their head and the food on their table and all of that stuff. So you've done that. You've moved on. You've picked up online. And now this is your full-time job. No more leaving with them screaming at the window. No more night shifts. No more long, 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 long shifts. No more, out on the street. You know, this is where you are now. So aside from, you know, obviously seeing your family and how working as a police officer and that shift work, you know, affected them, you've obviously got to make a decision based on like, okay, so is this making us money to help put roof over our heads? Like, are we ready to talk about or dip our toe in this area?
Yeah. We decided to have another baby with Teddy. And by decide, I mean, I was like, let's have another baby. And then 2 weeks later, Knox and Finn got tonsillitis. And I was like, fuck that. I don't want another baby. This is too hard. They were both on top of me with 40 degree temperatures on the lounge. I'm carrying them into the doctors going, how do I carry another one? Like, I just have no more hands. Like, and then too late, I was already pregnant, which is an amazing blessing. This is sort of, you know, 3 years, 4 years in by now. And I fell pregnant with Teddy and I went on my maternity leave, which I was hanging for. And so I got 9 months maternity leave at half pay with Teddy. And then I took another unpaid year and went, okay, I'm going to give this a go. Like, I'm just going to put my business hat on and just see what I can do and see if I can supplement enough to make us okay. and learn how it works. Yeah. Because I was the same thing. I'm like, I have all these followers. I have all these people watching me. I'm watching other influencers rep brands and get paid and talk about things, and I'm buying stuff that they're all promoting. Like, you know, so everyone's making money here.
At this point, you'd be getting things for free. You'd be obviously receiving gifts and stuff like that.
When Teddy was born, it started.
Yeah.
So we like didn't take anything for years and years and years. And then so yeah, once Teddy was born and I was pregnant, people were like, oh, we've seen, you know, Bugaboo contacted me and was like, oh, we've seen you've used Bugaboo in all of your posts. I've always owned Bugaboos. They're like, oh, we'd love to send you one for Teddy. And I was like, holy crap, like a whole pram. Like, great. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, a car seat company contacted us and was like, can we send you a car seat? And I was like, sure. Yes, that's amazing. Yeah. Thank you. Like, and you know, like normal family, like that's a massive.
That's huge. That's a huge, yeah, that's humongous. A huge financial burden taken off any family.
Yeah. We like dipped our toe in it there.
Yeah.
But I had no idea how then to start charging brands and how to make money. Because obviously free stuff doesn't pay the mortgage.
Yes.
You know, like, and I think that's where a big misconception is, that brands and followers will be like, well, they're going to send you a really beautiful dress worth, you know, $200 and all you've got to do is talk about it. Absolutely. That's amazing. And in the early years, amazing. But once you make the decision that it's going to become a business and that's going to feed your family, then you need to switch off and go, okay, that dress, although it's beautiful, is not going to pay my electricity bill this month. It's not going to pay my food. It's, you know, and the whole point of that business to send me that dress is so that I will wear it and other people will buy it. And therefore they will make money. You know, they're trying to make money. Like every business, they're trying to get exposure. They're trying to get people to follow them, which means that eventually they will spend money. So get to the point where you go, okay, well, how do I make that next step? Like, how do I jump into that territory?
Yeah. People don't generally like to ask for money, especially when you're feeling so grateful that these businesses want to work with you. So I can imagine the mindset shift that went with, you know, not only viewing what you're doing as a legit business, because I think around this stage as well. So I know you briefly touched on my business previously when I was sort of working in product-based business, you know, influencer marketing was sort of just becoming a thing. People weren't really paying for it, but you were, people were promoting brands and stuff like that. So it must be really difficult to try and then, you know, this new industry, I suppose, or this new way of marketing is not a new industry, but this new way of marketing products, you know, before we were used to seeing celebrities on TV and all of that, or on the radio, but now they're in front of us on our screens, on our phones, on our computers. Yeah, that must be a big shift to then say, actually, this is a legit role with a legit business, and we would like to get paid for all the work that we're doing with that. So how was that with the brands that you were working with? Like, how did you find, was there any sort of resistance with brands once you decided that this is our full-time business now, we want to, you know, we need to make money from this, from an unpaid maternity leave, you know, was there resistance with businesses with that, or was this something that in your experience the businesses kind of, they could see that things were changing and they sort of, you know, adapted quite well?
Oh yeah, I was so shocked. Like, obviously, once you decide to make it as a business, you need to be professional. You know, you have media kits made up, which are basically documents that I'll send to a brand and it has all my insights on it. How many people a day watch my stories? How many people do my posts reach? How many clicks do they make when I ask them to click on a link or suggest that they click on a link? You know, they need to know a return on investment, which is, you know, so when we get it right down to the core on how influencers make money and why should they make money, we have to look at social media like any other platform, any other medium. You know, we consume free-to-air content on TV and we see the ads, and we know we're going to see ads because we're not paying to watch those TV shows. Mm-hmm. They're free for us, and in return, we have to watch ads. We may mute them, walk away when they're on, but they're going to play. When we watch Netflix, we know that we're not going to see an ad because we pay to be there and we're paying for that content. So when you look at social media and you go, cool, and I think this is where a lot of misconceptions come and a lot of like negative sort of comments that influencers will get. And I know I've received plenty of messages that say, oh, I love following you. I get so much out of your content. I love everything you say. You've inspired me to do this and that, this and that. But I don't want to see ads, so I'm unfollowing. And it's like, well, it's really, we're in this give and take relationship. You can skip through the ads. You don't have to watch them. That's just like we do on TV, just like we do in magazines, just like we do on the radio. But we produce all this content for you and in hopes of helping someone, because at the core, most people online that are talking do it because they want to help. They want to connect. They want to be like it's social media. They want to build connections with people and to help people. But on the same thing, we then ask for that little bit of, you know, that give and take, ask for it back and going, well, I'm going to put this out up. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to watch it. You don't have to engage with it at all. But a brand will pay me so that the rest of my content for you is always free and costs you nothing. So then when I decided to do that, I sort of would go back to brands and say, well, here's my media kit and, you know, professional, have everything done up with all our figures and stuff, our numbers of our follower base and stuff. And they would just reply and go, great, can you let me know what your rates are? These are what we want. We want two stories and a post. And I was like, oh, this is what obviously happens. And I didn't know, because I didn't know anyone that was doing it. I didn't really have friends in the industry. Like, I had no idea. So I'm just sitting at home on my phone going, oh, okay.
Yeah, so like you can just Google like what's the average rate of an influencer for promoting this many stories. Like there's no rate card with that. It's industry regulated across the board.
And like no one talks about what they earn, right? Like you don't just walk up to someone else in the same job as you and be like, hey, how much are you earning?
So say, hi, I'm a small business owner. I would like you to promote my products. Are you going to charge me the same amount as you're going to charge, you know, people like Disney or Netflix or Lego? Because I mean, I don't have that sort of cash.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, I'm going to talk for myself. Obviously, every influencer and content creator would charge their own way, their own thing. I hope it's pretty evident that I'm very passionate about small businesses. Like my parents have always owned small businesses and my family, it's something that's close. And obviously I'm a business and I know how hard it is. So no, I offer discounts for small businesses always. But in saying that, some of the returns that these small businesses are getting are epic, you know, and they're measurable. So with Disney or Netflix or one of those big companies, Lego, they can't really measure what their ROI is, you know, what their return on their investment is. You know, if I say to someone, that was on Brad's page, but we just did the Back to the Outback movie premiere, they can't then go, oh, well, this many people watch that movie today because of Brad's reel, you know, where a small business can go, well, I had, you know, this many sales with totaling this amount of money using her code in 24-hour period. So they get that really good return, as opposed to if they were advertising on the radio or in a magazine or something where they probably wouldn't get any of those insights. I can tell them how many people watched my ad, how many people shared it, how many people replied to it, what the general feedback is, because followers give you feedback constantly. Good or bad, they will tell you.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, we're here for this or we are not here for that, you know. So it's a really, I think as a small business, it's such an interesting tool in your toolbox to work with influencers.
And when we see these things, like you guys, I think, if correct me if I'm wrong, but there is something that Instagram stipulated about there being, you know, the transparency with that as well in relation to when you work with brands. So they've introduced that paid partnership tag, which some people are a little bit more loose about. Some people are a stickler for it and will use it all the time. Some people, they're a little bit more discreet, let's put it that way. What's that about? Like, do you have to? Do you don't? You don't have to. You have to declare.
Yeah, so it comes from a bunch of agents and I believe content creators and stuff all got together and basically did like a guideline, which is like a fair work kind of, you know, being open and transparent, and did like a set of guidelines for content creators on what you should be declaring so that people know. if I get on and say to you, I have used this collagen product and my skin has changed, my hair has changed, and I'm being paid to say that, and I don't tell you I'm being paid for that, then obviously you're going to take it with a different grain of salt than if I say to you, I am being paid to talk about this collagen product. My answer may be exactly the same. You know, I am obviously putting my name to it regardless whether I'm being paid or not, but you as the consumer are going to take it differently if you know it's a paid ad as opposed to me just chatting as a mom, as me.
A genuine word of mouth versus advertisement slash promotion.
Exactly. And any influencer worth their salt would never, ever put their name to anything that they didn't believe in, because my goodness, like, it will bite you in the butt. Like, you will find out very quickly and you will lose credibility. It doesn't matter how much money a brand's willing to throw at you. If you think the product is no good, there is no way I would put my name to it, because we have that constant communication with our followers. It's not like people watching TV that can't then hit a story reply and go, actually, I bought this last month because you said it was great and it's crap.
Like, yeah.
So you can get that real-time feedback. So you're supposed to tell people when something is a gift, you are being paid for something. The paid partnership toggle on Instagram is really difficult. When it works, it's fantastic, but it often disappears off your page. If you get a community report or something put in against you, so say one day I said Finn was a monkey because he was climbing up a tree, and I said little monkey, that was flagged by Instagram's automatic bots as being a slur and gave me basically like a mark against my name to say like I've done the wrong thing, and I lost all my paid partnership tools until I could go back to them. They obviously had a real person review it, and they all came back again. So if an influencer hasn't used that paid partnership toggle, don't think they're trying to be dodgy necessarily, but they should then somewhere else be in there and say they are a partner, or yeah, this is an ad, or they're an ambassador for them, to make it transparent so that it is all fair and even when you guys are listening to what we're saying.
Being in the industry must be really frustrating for you to see that there are, let's just call them dodgy influencers around, people who do the wrong thing, people who do promote products that they don't believe in. Much like any industry, how does that make you feel? How do you handle that sort of thing? Have you got any, have you got any instances that you can discreetly talk about or don't want to talk about? I guess it's hard because there are those people and people are a little bit, mistrusting of influencers. So, I'd be lying if I said that there wasn't a bad name for some of them.
I think people are getting pretty good at telling though. If everyone knows that I use Blossom by Ash candles, right? Everyone knows. I work with her regularly. I am under no contract, obligation, or being paid any money to not rep another candle brand. So although people may send me candles or ask to send me candles and their candles may be fantastic, I'm going to say no every single time. Even if I don't have another candle promo with Blossom by Ash anytime soon. She may never hire me again. But at that stage, I'm like, can't rep another candle brand because people will watch it and be like, what do you mean? Well, which are better? Well, which are, why are you now talking about a different brand? What happened to that brand? Yeah. Everything you do or don't do sends a message as well. So I think if you're following someone that every week uses a different brand, skincare, I must say, is the exception because we all know that I'm slightly obsessed with it and I try all of the things.
Skin also changes though. Let's.
So I think you have to really navigate it carefully and gracefully that you don't mix things up and be loyal to the brands you work with and, really build those relationships with those brands. Like I've worked with some brands like Indira Trading, for instance. I have worked with her for probably since day one. I reckon she was probably one of the first people I did a paid partnership with, and I have not raised my rates. I still work for the same money, and I would just never, ever work with anyone that competes with her because we have built such a beautiful relationship that I want to see them do well. And I think that if you do your homework and chat with people, you can really build relationships with, you know, the influencers. A little bit different if they use an agency. It's a bit trickier to build that relationship, obviously. Yeah. I deal with everything ourselves. But yeah, I think you can kind of, if you're really, you know, clue in and really watch the little stuff, then you should be able to weed out. I mean, you're always going to make mistakes, and you know, there's risk in everything, but there's a little few things you can do just to try and safeguard a little bit.
Yeah, you'll be able to see who's full of it and who's not, who's being a little bit more genuine than others who are changing all the time. On that, what happens if you're working with a brand and things get a little bit sour? What happens if they're no longer aligned? What happens if they've brought out a product that you don't like, or, you know, all of these reasons that I guess you would feel that you might want to distance yourself, break a partnership, no longer work with them? How is that handled? Like, how do you handle that?
It's happened a couple of times, and I think because I'm so over the top with my wanting to connect with people and really build that relationship with brands and other people, that it's probably going to happen to me a fair few more times. I always say to you, like, when will I learn? And you're like, I hope you don't, because you'll change. But
don't let the mean people change your heart.
It's really hard. I would, like, the way I personally handle it is I would basically just pull back and distance myself. We all know that drama on social media is, you know, it's a beast. It gets bigger than you ever intend, and it's a lot to deal with. So I don't come out and say, you know, I have ended my partnership with this person or this brand because I don't agree with what they've done, or this is what they've done wrong to me, or whatever. But it then, because I choose not to do that, because I obviously understand that if I can help brands succeed and I can help brands make money and sell products, I can also hurt brands. One time was when we were asked to create jewelry with Buddy's Ashes, and I agreed, and they were very, very poorly made, and within a week the stone with his ashes fell from the ring and was lost. So, you know, there's a part now of my baby's ashes that are on the floor somewhere, probably in Bunnings or something. And it was devastating. I still didn't speak about it until the business was slandering me, saying that I didn't want to promote them anymore, because I basically said to her, I can't promote you as quality anymore. I've seen what's happened. This has broken my heart. I would never, ever want another parent or another grieving person to go through this. And it wasn't until the brand then got online with an opinion and you know, a big story, that I sort of went, okay, now I'm going to talk, and I'm just going to tell my truth and tell what's happened, and people can make up their minds for themselves. I generally just pull away and sever ties. And then people message me and will say, oh, I've noticed that you're not doing this anymore. I've noticed that you've aligned yourself with somebody else. And I do just have a chat about it in DMs. But I think to go public and to get on your stories, you can cause a lot of damage. Yeah. So it's something that, you know, if you're going to take the influence side of it in the positive, you've really got to acknowledge that you could make a big harmful impact as well, you know.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like it's so hard. Obviously, like I said, I'm not going to slander people, and I'm not going to go into specifics, although I know everyone listening will be like, oh, my God, just tell us what happened. because I still, to this day, will get DMs about a particular partnership that I ended up having to sever, and that came to big financial loss to me. And it was actually because contractors and things that were working within the partnership were being mistreated, and my values and had been seriously crossed. And to keep any kind of integrity I had to walk away. So it's so personal then, if people then will obviously look in and go, oh, well, she just took what she could get and moved on to the next one. And it's like, yeah, I hope that by listening to this, people might go, oh, okay, the influencer isn't saying anything because she doesn't want to slander, or he doesn't want to slander a person or a business or a, you know, an agent or whatever. But perhaps there's more to the story of why they've changed brands or why they've, you know, gone down a new route without making it public and messy and yeah, airing out dirty laundry.
And I think it's easy to, I mean, we see it time and time again. We see big companies that take, you know, little companies for a ride. And we're so used to seeing that sort of thing happen that I think sometimes, even though it's on a, you know, a much smaller scale, we've got people with big numbers who people just sort of see the numbers and think, you know, that's the assumption that they've made. I'm not going to say that never happens. That would be a lie.
Absolutely.
We've all seen it. But there are other companies. They're not even necessarily little companies. They're small businesses. There are bigger businesses that do it too, that will get what they can out of influencers like yourself, I guess. And then you're the one that ends up, I guess, being used and, like you were saying, feeling like you've given them all these things, but it's just been take, 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 and they've had nothing to bring to the party. It needs to be this mutual level. And that's where the relationships and the partnerships really do come from. Like, okay, well, you know, it is still a business transaction. I'll give you A and you give me B. Like,
oh, exactly. And that's it. Like, we're not here just to help. We're here to have a business as well. So it's, and everyone can help each other. Like, even the influencers with smaller numbers, like, you know, 1,000 followers, 2,000 followers, they can really influence people that watch them. You know, don't think that because you have to have 100,000 followers to have an influence online. It's absolutely not. And like, brands work with smaller accounts as well that get amazing return on investments and stuff. And that's probably where, if you're a business that just wants to gift product, that's where I would say to look at those smaller businesses, that are those smaller accounts that aren't looking to run it like a business, and they're just happy to be the brand ambassadors where they get discounts on your products, the influencers where you'll send them products and they'll just, they're happy with that contra. It's called contra, and it's, I'll give you a dress and you give me a story. But obviously it's not going to be seen by 30,000 people like you would on my stories without that financial exchange as well. In saying that, it's social media. So it definitely does happen, and bigger accounts do definitely take gifts and share them or share without charging money and stuff. But it's hard without giving away figures. And I know people want figures. Like, I know people will be listening right now, like, just give me the number. What does it cost to have a story with you? I'm not going to do that because obviously I'm also disclosing brands and the relationships and the contracts and stuff that we have. But I will say, so the Spewy bed mats, she's given me permission to talk about this. I did this promo. I think it was my last promo before we went to air today. And we've worked together several times. We don't always get this result. We have had some amazing results, and then we've had some not so amazing ones. Joe is an incredible person to work with. I love her. She puts no pressure on me. She gives me full creative control. She basically came to me this time, was like, I want to promote the bed mats. I want to show parents that if their child has an accident during the night, this is going to save them from having to do a full sheet change, and it's going to protect their mattress. So then I've gone away and I'm like, cool, I'm going to show that by tipping some water on there, actually showing how absorbent it is. It's such a brilliant product. It sells itself. I just need to show people how it works and to build that awareness and that trust for the brand. So we did that, and she made 20 times her investment. So the money she paid me, she earned 20 times that amount of money in 24 hours from my story.
Wow. That's, I mean, they're pretty incredible results. They're not always like that. And that's what I think businesses need to realize, that it's not always going to be like that. But that's where you need to trust your influencer. That's where you need to do your research and trust that they know what's best, and then devise a strategy. And in this case, this is exactly what's happened. And that's fantastic, especially for a small business.
Oh, and this is it. Like, she's a mom, a local mom, this app's working her butt off to be seen. She's developed this incredible product. She's done all the hard work, and now she's desperately trying to get in front of people. And that's what my platform provides, is that land, you know, that place to get in front of people, to let 20, 30,000 people a day see your product. And I'm so thrilled for her. Like, I'm just so over the moon because she was so excited and so happy. And that just, that's what really fills my cup. Like, then I just feel so good about it. And if anyone then says to me, oh, I hate ads, I'm like, well, like unfollow, like I don't care, because look at the impact that this has had for her business, her family, like, and all the people now that are going to be going, oh my God, my kids wet the bed and tonight I can just roll this mat off and put it in the laundry and I don't have to do a sheet change. They're going to be like, oh, I'm so glad I bought this. Like, it, I don't care if you don't like it, because that just makes my cup so full. Like, there's so many people winning here.
You are connecting, like you said, and getting to know your audience, and you are the person who knows the best. So we, you know, as businesses, they should trust you. So I guess that leads me to ask as well, like, if I want to work with you, do I have to tell you what you need to write, or do I, you know, like, how does that work? Do you write the stuff yourself, or is that what businesses have given you?
In some cases, you will have strict stuff. Like, you can't say that, you know, say I'm promoting a lolly, their legal team would be like, you can't say that this is good for kids. You know, like, you can't say that this will help clean their teeth. Like, so they'll have
resources. Helps keep them quiet. Small businesses.
Definitely can say that. So yeah, you may have legal things that you need to be aware of. Obviously, like I said, it's never going to change what you say or what your opinion is. At the core is still just my words. Small businesses, I always ask for some kind of brief as well. Like, what is your intention? What do you want my followers to know? If you could speak to them directly about your baby, your business, your product, what do you want them to come away with? So say for the spewy bed mats, she's like, I really want people to understand that if they have this on their bed and their child wets themselves, has an accident, they're cool. Like, it's good. It's going to save them work. They're just going to be able to roll it up, pop it away. They don't have to change their sheets. Their mattresses are protected. I want them to know that this is something that's going to help them. So then it's my job to go, okay, how can I show that without just saying it? How can I get that across to people that are watching me? Obviously, I've used them for years. How can I know that that's true? So that's when I was like, cool, I'll get a cup of water and I'll tip it on there and I'll show that it literally doesn't go through. And I think that's why we had such a good return this time, because I've talked about them a few times before and then I've showed it in action and they're like, awesome, I can trust this. I know that it's legit. But so yes and no, you definitely get briefs, and but we still always have that creative control. And we say no to brands when we lose creative control. Like, several times they'll say, so say a big brand contacts me, let's say they've contacted me and they're like, we're releasing a new movie, we want you to do this. And I go back and go, great, I've got to pitch them a concept. So I'll go back and say, look, this is my idea. I'm going to set this up and we're going to, I'm trying to think of one that I've done recently. Say, let's use it Back to the Outback again, because we've only just recently done that on Brad's page. So they've come to us and went, there's this cool new kids movie. This is what the movie's about. This is what we want people to know, that it's a family fun movie. Like, it's got beautiful characters that are talking about differences and how beautiful, you know, these animals are that maybe not seen as beautiful, and get these messages across. How? And so then we go back to them and we're like, cool, this is our idea. Put the drone and we'll get the kids in there, kitted up in their gear, and they'll go exploring through the bushland looking for these animals out of the movie. And then they can come back and say no. They can come back and say, no, we hate that. And we may have to pitch them again. They could come back and go, no, sorry, this is what we want. And if that's anything to do with the kids acting, then I say no, because, you know, I'll say the kids are not performing monkeys. If it's something that's full on, then I'm like, nah, we're not, that's not what we do. So it may end there. The conversation may end there, or they may go, okay, cool, how about instead of that, we get a photo. Will you do a photo? And then we can, yes or no. So you negotiate back and forwards a lot. With small businesses, I find more of a connection, and that social connection, where it's really up to me to try and advertise their business in the best way that I can do. And most of them trust us. And that would be my biggest advice, is, you know, give influencers, give them what's important to you and what message you want to get across to their audience, and then let them run with it, because they will know. They know whether their audience will respond better to them just sitting there talking to camera, or whether they love the transitions in, you know, fun transitions in reels. They'll know what they generally respond to. So don't go in and go, I want this really high-tech transitional reel, and that influencer might go, oh no, my audience is not here for that, or that's not something I normally do, so we don't align.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was a big one. dying to hear what you guys all think. So please come and let me know. Next week, we'll continue the conversation. I've got some amazing tips from start to finish on how to hire an influencer for you small business owners that are thinking, I want to get in on this. And we also talk about the kids being online and a few other little things where I'm pretty sure I was asked to rate my lifestyle and my career out of 10. So that's all next week. And I can't wait to hear what you guys think. Thank you.